Hello and welcome into Wednesday's edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. A little later on in the show, we weren't expecting it to be as explosive as it was, but Alexis Nunez sat down with a former Manchester United defender, now at Lyon, Rafael, who had some very strong things to say about his Brazilian teammate, Neymar. Frank Leboeuf and Julian Laurent with us to react to that. Meanwhile, Craig Burley and Donald Hutchinson talk about the potential moves that Newcastle make if this takeover does indeed go through. Shaka Hislop with us as well for extra time. Plus, Mark Ogden reflects on 7 years since Manchester United won the Premier League title. We start, though, by taking a look how different European leagues are approaching the return of football after the coronavirus. Interesting stuff from the Dutch in the sense that the government said, look, there will be no football until September 1st. This is what the Dutch FA had to say then in response to that. Well, no professional football can be played even without an audience until September 1st as a result. The Board of Professional Football intends not to continue playing the 2019-2020 league. On Friday, the clubs and other parties involved will meet to discuss the consequences. Meanwhile, in Switzerland, slightly different. With the resumption of play with ghost games, obviously that's matches without spectators, under scientific supervision and combined with the risk management concept, top football wants to send a signal it is possible to return to something closer to normality as soon as possible. Now, this seems to be the only viable way to save Swiss professional football in its current form, but at the same time complying with the important requirements for the protection of players and the population. Meanwhile, Sweden. This is interesting. The date we're working towards is June the 14th. The ambition is to still play all the games with fans at the stadium, but Swedish elite football are following the coronavirus developments all the time in society as a whole and possible new directives from the authorities. Meanwhile, we go from that to Brazil. Now, since winning their fifth World Cup in 2002, they failed to make it back to even a final in the last four editions of the tournament. Today, Alexis Nunez interviewed Rafael, of course, a Brazilian international, formerly of Manchester United, now with Lyon, and asked him what it will take to win their sixth World Cup, and he said a lot depends on their talisman.
We need Neymar. That's for sure. We need a lot of him. He needs to improve a lot of things. Like I said, outside the pitch is important for the footballers. So he needs to improve a lot outside the pitch to come inside the pitch and do his best. So I hope he can do that. And if he does, we have a big chance to win.
And I mean, when you look at last World Cup, of course, as well, and before, you know, he got injuries and stuff like that. You could see how, like you said, on his best day, it's almost impossible for anyone to stop him. Do you think now that we're moving on and it will be 4 years then, do you think he would have matured enough to be that leader that Brazil needs?
I think Neymar is not a leader. I don't think he's a leader. It's not him. But I think he can do the things he does, because like you said, if he is good, if he is like focused and concentrated in his football, he is the best player in the world. But I think football is not his first option of life today. You know what I mean? Like he has so many stuff around him. He does so many things. So he thinks in his mind, I don't need to do that to play well. I don't need to, you know what I mean? So you need to, a lot of things you need to do. And like I said, if he does that, if he someone can put this in his mind, because I know him, I play with him, I play Olympic games with him, I've been in national team with him, I know he's a hard guy to listen the others, you know, when you speak, not good with him. I'm saying the truth, but sometimes you don't want to say this. Some people don't want to say the truth. Don't want to listen to the truth. They want to say you are good. You are magic. They want you to say all the good stuff, but the life is not like that. And I think you need to listen more and If he does that, it'll be hard to stop Brazil.
Explosive stuff then from Raphael here to discuss it, Frank Leboeuf. But really, we have to start, don't we, with the number one Neymar fan, of course, attendee to his birthday parties, calls him Nene, Julien Laurent is with us. Jules, what do you make of those comments? Pretty strong stuff.
I'm not really convinced, I have to say. I think Raphael is a lovely guy and a good footballer, but I'm not really sure I'm on board with that. The thing about his life on and off the pitch, everybody is free to do whatever they want. Maybe Neymar would be a better player if he was maybe not partying as much off the field. Maybe he would not be. I don't know, maybe Raphael would be a much better player if he was going out more. I'm not so sure. And in terms of the leadership, I mean, come on. Neymar is your best player. He's the best player at PSG. He's the best player for Brazil. He's your leader. Maybe he's not the biggest voice in the dressing room, but Zinedine Zidane wasn't either. And yet he was France's leader. He won the World Cup and the Euros as France's leader because he was the best player technically, but the best player on the pitch, full stop. It's not because you have the biggest voice in the dressing room that you're a leader or not a leader. That doesn't define you as a football player. If you're the best in your team, then of course you're a leader. And you lead by example on the pitch by making your team win games.
Why would he make this up though, Jules? Why would he come out and say things like Neymar can't take criticism, doesn't listen to people who've got negative things who are trying to help him?
I don't know. I didn't have time before the show to check how many times they played together. I don't even know if Rafael had played for Brazil. But if he'd hardly played with Neymar, how would he know that anyway? Maybe it's the impression he has from the outside or from what he hears in Brazil or from Brazil, if you want, and when the national team plays together or anything like this. And when he's faced Neymar as well, he's done it a few times since he moved to France. But I don't know. I think criticism is part of football right now at the moment and as a footballer's life. And I think Neymar knows that pretty well. Some reacts better to others to criticism. It also depends where the criticism comes from and how it's placed. I've never seen Neymar not being good with criticism. I think he takes it on board and moves on maybe quicker than others. But I'm not really on board with what Raphael had to say, I have to say.
Frank, what do you make of it all?
Very strange way of talking with another time teammate for the national team. I think it's not appropriate. I can make critics because I'm not friend with Neymar, because it's my job to say what I think. But I think you have to a little bit sometimes refrain of criticizing a friend of you when you have the possibility or maybe to play. It makes no sense, because as Jules said, you can be a technical leader without being a leader in itself. Didier Deschamps was a leader. He was talking. Laurent Blanc was a leader for the national team, French national team. They were talking, but Zidane was a technical leader. And I think it's what has been asked to Neymar at first. They don't care about him talking to the rest of the squad. They want him to be the best on the field to show the way to success. So I don't agree with what Raphael said. I think what just Raphael tell us is that they're not friends. Otherwise, he would have talked another way about Neymar. Yes, you can say some stuff to your best friend. Yes, you can say that in the dressing room, maybe on the pitch, but not in front of the camera when you have the possibility to play with him another time.
It's interesting, Jules, you picked up the Brazilian angle on all of this. And being married to a Brazilian, I'm exposed to a lot of Brazilian people within my life. And it's fascinating to talk to them about Neymar. Everyone is negative about him. Every single person that I meet, it seems, who have got links with Brazil have got something negative to say about him. And this is Raphael, of course, pouring fuel onto that. And I speak of why? What is it with Neymar? Why? Well, you know, he's diving. He's about the money. He's about the party. He's about this or that. But you feel like Ronaldinho, Ronaldo were like that as well. But they seem to get a pass in Brazil compared to Neymar, Jules.
You're right. I find it fascinating the treatment or the image that he has back home, which can't be easy for him to deal with as well. Maybe because the expectations were so big, so huge from a very young age, when he was 16 at Santos, 17 with the national team, and etc., etc. and hasn't really happened for him in Brazil in the World Cup mostly. Copa America has been a bit different, but in the World Cup, that maybe he's been seen as the one responsible for Brazil not achieving what they should have achieved maybe in World Cups. And then if you point the finger at him, then you look not at the talent, because surely everybody in Brazil knows how talented he is and that he's one of the best in the world, potentially, technically. But maybe pointing the finger as his way of living, those criticism comes from that. If you watch the documentary, the All of Nothing documentary on Brazil, for example, you could see already how different he was, maybe the privileges that he had with the national team, but also with PSG. And maybe some people don't like that. And maybe that's why a lot of the criticism is aimed at him and aimed at what he does as a player and the lack of achievement maybe that he's had with the national team.
But then he doesn't help himself, does he, Frank? With the rolling around, with the shoe on his head, with the celebrations, with some of the words that he comes out with, sometimes you feel that despite the fact he's mature on paper, obviously in his late 20s now, you can still kind of think, well, he still acts too much like a kid.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's the problem, I think, for many people. I remember Zinedine Zidane in 96 before the European Championship in England, at the position of a leader, and didn't fill up the position with his games, and has been a little bit criticized. But we reach another level where we criticize the man, we criticize the way he behaves in and out of the field. I just want to talk about what he does on the field. And there is a way of selfishness when you see him playing, when you see him, the way he behaves. And I think it's what it is, and it's what people dislike about Neymar Junior, is that he doesn't go with the rest of the squad. It doesn't fit maybe what Brazilian used to see with their stars, with Ronaldo, with Rivaldo, Pele, that those guys were loved by their teammates. It's not the case with Neymar. The talent is there, for sure, for everybody, it's obvious. But the mentality is not. It's more, a selfish guy, playing fantastically well sometimes, but not giving enough in terms of communication on and out the field to please even the Brazilians.
Last word on this to you, Jules.
I just think it can't be easy. Whether you like him or not, I don't think it can be easy to be Neymar. And again, having that kind of reputation and all those expectations since a very young age, and maybe not being ready for it, and having that weight on your shoulders all those years with, obviously, the top of it being the 2014 World Cup on home soil, where you get that injury against Colombia, and after that everything is a nightmare that you wish had been the biggest dream of your life. And I just don't think it can be easy right now. And as you mentioned earlier, as you know so well, Brazilians, I think, are quite hard to please and quite hard to convince. And I think Neymar could have been very different had he had more success with the national team earlier, maybe. And now he has to dig in and dig in again and try to do, between now and the end of his career, to please all the Brazilians who've had so much expectations for him and he has never fulfilled.
Brazilians are indeed hard to please. I can attest to that. Thank you very much, gentlemen. You can listen to that full interview, by the way, with Rafael over on a special podcast we've put together. Him chatting to Alexis Nunes about lots of things, not only the Brazilian team, but Manchester United as well. You can listen to that podcast over on the website.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
A lot of talk about the Saudi Arabian consortium taking over at Newcastle. Julian Laurent detailing some of their plans as we welcome in Donna Hutchison and Craig Burley to the show. Donna, I want to start with you. Basically, they're looking at players that will be on a free. The likes of Cavani, Dries Mertens, Pedro, Willian. Does this work, in your opinion?
Absolutely. Now you're starting to talk to the most disillusional Newcastle fan ever, because all of a sudden now we are dreaming of the likes of Pochettino and all the hundreds of millions of pounds that are going to be spent to take Newcastle back to where they were in 95, 96. So the Geordies at this time are absolutely over the moon. They just want this takeover to be done. And then hopefully Newcastle start attracting the big name players.
But Craig, these are undoubtedly big name players, but they're players that are out of contract for a reason, aren't they?
Well, I think the likes of certainly Pedro and Willian would be players that, I think certainly Willian, that Chelsea would want to keep, certainly on short-term contracts. I don't think there's a doubt about that. However, you know, getting big-name players to the North East is problematic in itself. And I don't say that disrespectfully, but, you know, London for a long time became the hub. Manchester have been able to attract players. But getting people to go up to the northeast, away from the bright lights of London in particular, is always difficult, and that usually takes a lot of money. So it's not just finding these players, Dan. It's trying to coax them in to come into a project in Newcastle or wherever it is in the north of the country, and that in itself can be difficult to get over the line.
You're going to want people who are all on the same page, Don, as well, which could be tricky when you look at this list.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, Craig's right in what he's saying, but take you back to 95, 96 when Newcastle were attracting people like Tino Asprey. I know that's totally different to the names that we're mentioning now. But wages will certainly help, and that's going to have to be a factor because, you know, as Craig said, if we've got, or Newcastle are looking at Cavani and Pedro and Willian, these guys can all go to top clubs around Europe. Newcastle are going to have to offer these guys something completely different, and they're not going to sell Newcastle United on a sort of short-term project when they can, or one or two could be linked with the big clubs around Europe, like Willian's been linked with Barcelona for the last year and a half. So they're going to have to offer them something different, and that would be a massive spike in wages. Then all of a sudden, if these guys start to arrive, then I'm pretty sure Newcastle United, if they've got a top-class manager in like Max Allegri or a Pochettino, who is attracting big-name players in the short term, as in two or three big ones, huge names, they can start pulling in the best from the Premier League.
Meanwhile, with Willian and Pedro going, the suggestions that Chelsea could be looking at Coutinho to come in to replace them at Stamford Bridge. Craig, where do you stand on Coutinho to Chelsea?
Well, I'm not sure this is a goer, to be honest, because he's not exactly the same position as those other two players. Those two guys play more in the wide position. They've got a handful of playmakers already, albeit more natural wide players, but Mason Mount made a big impact in a short period of time after playing in the Championship just 12 to 18 months ago. Look, if I was able to get Philip Coutinho in my squad, would I take him, Dan? The answer is yes, I would. But it's going to come down to finances, it's going to come down to budget, and it's going to come down to what Frank Lampard needs more. I think we discussed this when it raised its head probably a month or so ago, is what positions does Frank Lampard really feel that Chelsea need the most? And first and foremost, that's a front man. And then you might be looking at a centre-half. So I think if this deal can be done at the right price, there is potential. But I think Chelsea, to be honest with you, I think Chelsea's prerogatives are in other positions.
Don, what do you think?
A little bit like Craig, really. I mean, if you're asking the big clubs like Liverpool and Chelsea, would you take Coutinho in your squad? Of course you would, because he's a very talented player. Player that just needs an arm around him and a shot of confidence. At the same time, I would love to sit down with Jody Morris, who's a friend of mine, and you guys know that I'm friends with Frank as well, and say, well, why aren't you offering Christian Pulisic this sort of position? Because instead of scouring Europe for a number 10 or someone that can play on either flank, you've got one indoors. You've got one in-house already on the books at Chelsea. Invest a little bit more time in Christian Pulisic. I hear from the grapevine that he's a little bit shy and a little bit quiet, so maybe it's a chance for Jody and for Frank to try and coax that out of him and make him a team player and make him more demanding on the pitch. Because if you are quiet in training, you are quite shy, you're then not going to give your best. That's just inevitable. So I'd like to know the reasons why, if Chelsea do go for Philip Coutinho, I can't imagine Christian Pulisic staying around forever.
Dan, Let me just say, since this pandemic hasn't dwindled Don's ability to have friends in the game, let me just balance this out and say, I have no friends. I am the one with no friends in the game. So don't say we don't bring balance to this show, because that's an equal balance.
Craig, let me ask you, if you were picking one player out of Christian Pulisic or Philippe Coutinho to go in and play at Chelsea, which one would it be?
Well, at the moment, well, of course it would be Philippe Coutinho, because he hasn't become a terrible player overnight. He's had a difficult 24 months or so, and there's not a doubt about it. But there's a reason Barcelona paid the $150 million or whatever it is for this guy, because he's a talent. And he's certainly not dead in the water yet. So, as I said, and we both said it, if Chelsea can get him at the right price and he can fit in, absolutely not a problem. But it could be a headache for others if this deal happens. I'm just not so sure that this is a deal Chelsea will be busting a gut to try and make happen, bearing in mind they've got other areas of the team they really need to strengthen.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder to keep up to date with all the latest transfer news. You can go over to our website and click on Transfer Talk. Time for the Anti-Manchester United segment. Of course, a daily feature here on the show. 7 years to the day since they won the Premier League title. Since then, 15 points. That's how close they've been to winning the title. That was against Leicester back in the day. They have been appalling. Out of the title race consistently throughout. Mark Ogden, Don Hutchison with me to discuss this. Don, it's incredible, really, how that gap, how that chasm has been since Sir Alex Ferguson led them to that title 7 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy when you're talking about a club the size of Man United, but I still have to remind you that Liverpool are gone 30 years before they're going to win the title. So it can happen, but take your mind back and my memory of that 2012 season when they won the league is Fergie's side, or sides over the years before that, he was always doing rebuilds. He was rebuilding the size of the team, the quality in the squad. He was investing, and they always done a pretty good job. In that last year when they won the title, he snatched Robin van Persie from Arsenal because they lost the season before on goal difference. So it was almost an emergency fix, a very quick fix. And then Fergie left and David Moyes come in. And obviously we know the stories from there. And it just felt as though looking at United's squad, it was deteriorating, not badly, but it was just ebbing away from how good they were. The class of 92 was just starting to fade. People like Paul Scholes, I think, only played a handful of games, the same as Ryan Giggs. And they needed an injection of quality. Then once David Moyes came through the door, unfortunately, he started looking at people like Leighton Baines and Marouane Fellaini instead of looking at the very, very top players that Man United should have been getting when Fergie left. So it all sort of spiralled into a huge decline. And I think only this season and towards the end of this season under Ollie, I'm seeing a dressing room that's far more harmonious. It's a lot more together. It's younger. It's got a lot more hunger. It's got more desire. Some of the big names have gone. There's one or two, in my opinion, that should still go. But I can see signs now. But it's been an awful long time since the success of Fergie's days.
Mark, what's, I think, interesting in this case is the fact that when you look at big teams who have kind of struggled, likes of Milan, for example, they just didn't have the funds to compete with the big sides. That's never been the case for Manchester United. The funds have always been there. They have spent the money. It's where they've spent it that has really left them in this hole.
They've probably had too much money, really, because the money's always been used as a kind of an all-encapsulating solution. So rather than do what Liverpool did 4 or 5 years ago and deciding to go for players that had a point to prove or value players that, you know, for instance, Firmino, Salah, Mane, Andy Robertson, the types that Liverpool took a chance on, United never really had to do that. They've always had the money to go out and buy a Angel Di Maria or a Paul Pogba or a Romelu Lukaku. So they've not really had to try as hard as other teams in terms of, you know, being smart in the market and just doing what they... You know, what they should do to have a good scouting network. So the money has probably been United's Achilles heel. But one thing I do think has been overlooked at the times is that this started before Fergie left. This started in 2010, 2011, when he started planning for the future and brought in the likes of Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, Ashley Young, Javier Hernandez, players that have served United okay, but not the calibre of the players that he brought in the past, Rio Ferdinand, Nemanja Vidic, Patrice Evra. The quality started to decline under Ferguson because Man City started spending big money. United thought that they could do it a different way, and time has proved that United did it the wrong way, and City had the value despite spending lots of money.
Mark, we know Don is an optimist. He's even calling that thing on his face a moustache at the moment. Let's go to you, though, for a bit of Objectivity on Manchester United. I understand the excitement given what they've done on the pitch over the last couple of months, but is this all really a mirage with regard to the big picture?
It is too early to start saying that Solskjaer has turned the corner, because I remember at the end of January they lost 2-0 at home to Burnley, and you know that was straight after the game at Liverpool where they lost in kind of abject fashion, and the fans had turned against the Glazers, the owners, and it was quite a moody time. You know, they went to Tranmere in the FA Cup, and if they'd lost at Tranmere, you know, it would have been it could have been curtains for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But they won 6-0. Bruno Fernandes came in, and they won every, so they hadn't lost with Bruno Fernandes in the team. So Fernandes has kind of coincided with the upturn, but it's only 7 or 8 games. It's too early, and I think you talk about glass half full, half empty. Well, some fans will say that today's a 6-year anniversary since David Moyes was sacked, rather than talk about the 7-year anniversary since the title win. So there's a few ups and downs, and it depends how you look at it. But I do think that it is too early to say that Solskjaer's turned the corner. It needs a lot more than 8 or 9 games to prove that.
Mark, you're a man of the people, obviously. When you speak to United fans and you could give them one wish, one thing to change at the club, what would they demand? What would they want?
They want new owners. They want the Glazers gone, and they want new owners. But then sometimes it's better the devil you know, because at least with the Glazers, you know, they put money in, they have, you know, they've overseen a club that's won things, but they think that the owners, in tandem with Ed Woodward, the chief exec, haven't done the right things. But, you know, maybe we're seeing signs of promise that are light at the end of the tunnel, so perhaps that Ed Woodward might have got it right in the end. But that is the one thing that United fans will always say is the Glazers, for many reasons, but rather than on the pitch, it's off the pitch.
Finally, Don, we had Danny Higginbottom on, obviously a staunch Manchester United fan, said, look, they're only 2 or 3 proper signings away from being title contenders next season. Where do you stand on that?
I'm not sure it's 2 or 3. I think it's a lot more than that. I think 2 or 3 to probably try and cement Manchester United back into a Champions League spot. Trying to get closer to Liverpool and Man City, in my opinion, is a very tough ask. And the United fans are going to have to be patient. And they're going to have to be patient in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He might not be the man that takes Man United back to a title. He might not lift the major honours under Manchester United. But what he's doing, he's building a very young squad, a hungry squad that can get them very, very close. Such a suggest, in my opinion, that 2 or 3 is the number to get them to a title. I think they're way off because, as I said, Liverpool will be spending big money when they return in the summer. So will Pep Guardiola's Man City. So they are already streets ahead of where Man U are. But in my opinion, I think they're going in the right direction.
Thank you very much, James. Just a reminder, Mark did a deep dive on where it's gone wrong for Manchester United over the last few years. This was published a few months ago. Still a lot of the points very relevant. You can check out that article over on the website.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Former German international Arne Friedrich will be joining us, so be sure to tune in. But that is it for today. Stay tuned, though. His horrible moustache returns, as does Xhaka in his new allegiance to Newcastle. Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Dora Hutchison and his terrible moustache with us, as is Xhaka Hislop. By the way, Xhaka had to order that Newcastle, whatever it is, off eBay.
Yes.
He heard there was money. He thought he'd pledge his support.
I'm trying to make a comeback. I'm available.
Yeah, I bet you are. Bet you are, Xhaka. The first question's about Newcastle. Which manager should they sign? Rafa Benitez, Pochettino, Allegri, or Favre? Let's go with you, Don.
Wow, good question. Lucien Favre would fit well, but my My ideal manager, I think, would be Pochettino, you know. I think Max Allegri's destined for bigger and better things. I'm not sure he would take the Newcastle project on. But if Pochettino went to Newcastle, he would be adored like you wouldn't believe.
Shaka Hislop? Kevin Keegan?
I agree with, well, it would be nice, but in all seriousness, I agree with Don. Pochettino, as a manager who knows English football and the Premier League, I think he'd be the easiest fit, and also has some experience in building what was a Spurs team on. Listen, I know it's a limited budget, which by all accounts won't be Newcastle's problem, but he's certainly shown that he can build a team from the ground up. I think that of the four would be the best fit.
Next question is about West Ham. Let's not forget, Don predicted that West Ham would finish above Leicester. I think that was back in November. That's worked out well. West Ham discuss. That's all the question says, Don.
Ah, dear. I mean, I did predict that with a good push they could get in the top six. I thought they'd be above Leicester. I thought they'd be above Everton and Wolves. So obviously I was way out on that one. I didn't see the disaster happening with Pellegrini. I thought he would have took them very close. I thought it was a steady hand. I did not see a lot of his players falling out of form. So real problems. I think this season's all about staying in the Premier League. If they do that, then hopefully with a good rebuild in the summer. Listen, I think everyone's in the same boat in the Premier League. No one knows what's really going to happen in terms of the transfer market in the summer, but this has been a bad year for West Ham.
What's worse, West Ham or your moustache?
Well, West Ham, without a shadow of a doubt, this has got potential.
I'm not so sure. At least West Ham out of the relegation zone. That moustache is right in it.
I mean, this is only week one, Shaq. Give it another week. You can't sack me after 1 week, one game in charge. I need a couple of weeks.
Yeah. That mustache is dusted.
To be fair, though, Shaq, let's face it. When it comes to facial hair, Shaq, you're pretty much National League, to be honest. So I don't think you can quite throw stones.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. No idea what you're talking about.
Right, good question, this. Who was the best, this is for you, Don, English striker in their prime? Alan Shearer, Gary Lineker, or Michael Owen?
Ooh. Oh, wow. I mean, I remember a young Michael Owen in his teens and his early 20s, and he was unplayable. Lineker, different class in his era. I think I'd lead towards Alan Shearer, and it might be a Newcastle thing, it might be a bit of Geordie bias, but I just think as an all-round number nine, I think all of his attributes, you know, were brilliant. He was physically very strong. As a centre-half, you wouldn't want to play against him. Fantastic in the air. His first touch was very good. His link play was good. His number of goals, out of this world. So I think out of the three, I'd lean towards Shearer.
In their prime, I suppose, is the key word. I think Michael Owen, when he was 19, my goodness gracious me. Oh. He was sensational. Let's not forget, a couple of years later, he won the Ballon d'Or. Shaka, who are you going for?
He wasn't in his prime when he was 19. I'm a Don.
Michael Owen was in his prime at 19,
Don.
Definitely. Definitely. I've listened to interviews with him, and he says that 19 is when he peaked.
So what are you telling me? It was all downhill from there. From 20 on, it was all downhill.
It's from the man himself. That's what Michael Owen said. What are you going to do? You're not going to doubt him, are you? Michael Owen says he peaked at 19.
Okay, whatever. I'm with Don. There's no bias to it, Don. Alan Shearer, all day, every day. I think he had every single attribute going, and whereas you might be able to criticize faults with Lineker and Owen, I don't think Shearer had any.
What was Owen's fault?
He's too short. And he peaked.
You say you can see faults with Owen and Lineker. What was Owen's fault? It's too short.
It's too short.
Too short.
Yeah. That's why you like Michael Owen. It's a short man thing. You short guys stick together.
That's why you hate Lionel Messi, Shaq.
That's right.
Good,
is he?
4 foot. 4 foot something, that don't qualify.
Okay, Shaq. The first part of this question, has Shaka ever been chipped?
Messi.
I can answer
wait,
yes.
I don't hate Messi. I don't hate Messi. Let's just go back right there. Right, carry on.
God, delay is really bad if you just heard that.
just registered.
Has Xhaka ever been chipped? Yes, is the answer to that. Also, what's the best chipped goal that you have seen, Xhaka?
Best chipped goal I've seen, Filip Albert against Peter Schmeichel. One, aww, because of who it was in Peter Schmeichel. And then second, the game, it's, I mean, the goal was simply unbelievable. And I think it was the fifth of five against Man U at St. James's Park. That was easily the best chip I've seen.
Not Messi, obviously.
I've never been chipped.
Meanwhile, Don, best chip goal you've ever seen?
I mean, I'd love to say Albert being a Newcastle fan, but as soon as you asked the question, Eric Cantona against Sunderland came to mind at the at Old Trafford when he just had the ball on the edge of the box and then he's chipped the goalkeeper. Then it's stuck in the stanchion. It was like, and he just stood there at Old Trafford and he just sort of said, yeah, whatever, collars up. So arrogant, so Cantona. But I think Albert is very, very close.
This is a great question for you, Don. You ready for this?
No.
Which Premier League player does Don liking himself today?
Oh, that is unfair. Stevie G's retired, yes. So I can't, you know what I mean? It's like, that's unfair. I don't know who plays. I mean, I've got a little bit of Tom Davies in me, where he likes to tackle and he likes to sort of snap people. But I'm trying to think of someone with a little bit of, I had a bit of flair at times. Do you know what? I'll just go out on a limb. I'll say Tom Davies because I can't start amalgamating two or three players.
Do you hear that, Shaq? Oh, someone who's got a little bit of flair.
Well, yeah, I was a jack of all trades, master.
Somebody's got a little bit of flair, likes to tackle, can score goals. Yeah, good Don.
Oh, yeah. Oh, when you think Don Hutchison, you think flair. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, you ask Evertonians when I wore that armband with number 10 on my back. It was all about flair.
Oh, dear.
Don peaked when he was 19 as
Shaka.
Well.
Hey.
Yeah.
Get ready, Shaq. This is complicated. Focus. When the opposition has a free kick, what goes through your mind? Do you do research on the opposition's free kick takers, like penalties?
Well, no, because you're not quite sure where the free kick is going to come from. So it's a total different skill set. And as far as when I was approaching free kicks, good free kicks would score. I just wouldn't allow, my intention was not to allow bad free kicks to go in. So try to get my wall right, my positioning right, and not cheat. And if it was there to be saved, make that save. If it was well struck, you just have to hold your hands up.
Shaka, here's one for you, because I can remember having argument or a discussion with David James at West Ham for hours and hours and hours after a training session. And what are you, Shaka? You must be 6'5", 6'6", good, you know, reach, and you can get across your goal line. Why wouldn't goalkeepers have no wall so you get plenty of time to see the free kick, but then stand in the middle of your goal and you can go 3 or 4 yards left, you can go 3 or 4 yards right? Why do you give us so much room for error?
I've actually tried something similar in practice games, and it's far more difficult to cover that 8 yards than it seems, even from a free kick, and when somebody can strike the ball as they want, without any kind of interruption. Even during the course of a game, you have defenders in play who normally take off, you know, half the goal or whatever it is, and that makes it easier or seem easier than it actually is. So it's not as straightforward as you think. Well, you know, you cover 8 yards. Ordinarily, you should be able to do that from a free kick from 20 yards. It's far more difficult than that.
Right, I'm coming back as a keeper. I'm getting reincarnated as a goalkeeper.
A goalkeeper with flair?
You've got too much flair to be a goalkeeper, Don.
Well, there you go. I'm glad you're Bravo.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right then, let's go World Cup. Who's your favourite World Cup team of all time, gentlemen? Don?
Ooh.
I mean, I think the best World Cups in my time, watching as a kid, were Spain 82, Mexico 86, and Italia 90. So I would probably say the Brazilian side of 82 with Socrates and Falcao and Adair and Zico. That for me was a proper side.
Trinidad and Tobago 2006.
Easily the best team to grace the World Cup stage. But to Don's point, I think that team, in the Brazil team in 82, is regarded as the best team to have not won the World Cup. And you can see why. That team was, but for that stumble against Italy, and I know Gab will probably say it different, I thought that was one of the best teams I'd seen play at that level. That team was simply unbelievable. Everything about it.
Final question for you, Shaka. If you do a power rankings on which FC crew members are holding up best during the quarantine?
Well, Don would be down the bottom looking at that mustache. up near the top, I'd probably have Craig because he's used to being alone and talking to nobody. And then
Andy can play golf.
As long as he gets to play his golf, he's fine being ostracized from the rest of humanity. Stuart Robson seems to be doing quite well. He's working out, losing weight. I haven't seen Gab for a few days, so I'm going to question how high he is. Probably just off the bottom, thanks to the aforementioned mustache. Doing that? I don't. You just here baking strange cakes. I'm not sure where you'd place.
I am here. I'm not certainly nowhere near the top. let's be honest. My 6-year-old is making sure of that.
I saw your cake. That rainbow cake, Dan, had me a bit concerned.
Hey, I tell you what, it tasted great though. It tasted really good. Although it couldn't really taste worse than it looked. To be fair. I think that's a good point to end. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to Shaka. Thanks to Don. Keep your tweets coming in at ESPNFC. We'll be back here tomorrow for more. What a moment. Till then, goodbye.